You're listening to live courtroom coverage of the trial of Lori Vallow Daybell from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
How long does it last? All right, please be seated. The jury is present. The defendant can proceed with her closing argument.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the state of Arizona has the 100% burden of proving that I committed a crime, a grievous crime, conspiracy to commit premeditated murder of my husband, Charles Vallow. The state has the burden of proving to you that this event was not self-defense. In your jury instruction under the instruction, use of force and crime prevention, the last line reads, if the state fails to carry this burden, then you must find the defendant not guilty. In the law, under your jury instruction titled Justification for Defense of a Third Party, the last line reads, if the state fails to carry this burden, you must find the defendant not guilty. Under your jury instruction titled Justification for Self-Defense, the last line reads, if the state fails to carry this burden, you must find the defendant not guilty. In your jury instruction, under presumption of innocence, it states, the law does not require the defendant to prove innocence. Every defendant is presumed by law to be innocent. Under the burden of proof, it explains that the state's burden is this: proof beyond a reasonable doubt is proof that leaves you firmly convinced of the defendant's guilt. If, on the other hand, you think there's a real possibility that he is not guilty, you must give him the benefit of the doubt and find him not guilty. In Arizona, self-defense is defined as not being a crime. So let's look at what we've learned in this trial. We learned that a shooting occurred and that 911 was called, that law enforcement was notified. We learned that fire, EMS, and Chandler police arrived at the scene. We learned that my brother, Alex Cox, came out of the house with his hands up as directed by 911 and was questioned by the police in the driveway. We learned that I came up with my daughter, Tylee, and we were told to wait by the car until police would speak with us. We learned from Detective Inklin on the stand that we asked for Tylee's medication from the house for her panic attacks, but it was not given to her. We learned that eventually my brother Alex was taken in a police car to the Chandler Police Department, uncuffed. We learned in this trial that my daughter Tylee and I were also taken to Chandler Police Department in a police van. We heard from Detective Inklin's testimony that her goal was to make small talk with us. And
the jury will determine what the testimony did or did not show. Go ahead.
That her goal was to make the small talk with us and all the way to the station so she could speak with us separately before we would talk about what actually happened. We learned that all three of us were separated and taken to three interview rooms where we each told police of the events of the day, each from our own perspectives, and answered all questions asked of us. We saw snippets of that interview in the trial here. The state did not show you the entire interview. Most of my police interview is admitted, though, into evidence. in this exhibit. It's number 286. And I would encourage you to watch that entire interview when you start your deliberations. It is important. It is important for you to determine for yourselves my demeanor and not listen to anyone else. You can see it with your own eyes and hear it with your own ears. We heard from several witnesses that because this event was almost 6 years ago, that their memories of the events and statements were probably better back then. Well, my police interview happened that very morning, and I told the police the events from my perspective at that time. It is admitted into evidence and will answer many of your questions. You did not see Tylee's interview, but we did learn from Detective Inkland that she did an interview that morning as well. You did not see Alex's interview, but we learned that Alex was interviewed that morning by Detective Moffitt, the original case agent, whom we did not hear from in this trial. The state chose not to show you those interviews.
Objection, Your Honor.
Or let you listen to the 911 call.
The jury shall disregard that last statement. Okay, the jury can only consider what was admitted into evidence.
We learned in this trial from Officer Kautheim's testimony that Alex was injured on the back of his head with a bump and, according to his testimony, a 1-inch laceration. We did not see those pictures documenting that injury as well. We learned in this trial that we did not know, the three of us, that our interviews were being recorded. We learned that Alex's phone was taken by police and put into an evidence bag, according to Detective Duncan, and that no digital copy of Alex's phone was taken by the Chandler Police Department, even though this is their normal protocol. We learned that Alex's phone was returned to him that same day with no further inquiries. We learned that after my interview and Tylee's interview that we were introduced to a victim's advocate and that gave us further instructions in another room where Tylee and I were reunited. We learned that soon after that, all three of us, Alex, Tylee, and myself, were taken in another van and dropped off back at our house. We learned that we were instructed at that time that we could not enter the house yet, that we were directed by law enforcement to take the rental car, since all three of our cars were inside the police tape. We were directed to return later in the afternoon when the scene was cleaned up. We learned in this trial that we did as directed and left the house in the rental car close to 12 p.m. We learned that we did not return to the house until contacted by Detective Inkland to return to the house so that Alex could walk the detectives through what they call a walkthrough. We learned that many detectives were present during that walkthrough with Alex. We learned that Detective Duncan was there, Detective Coons was there, Detective Moffitt was there, Detective Werther was there, and an officer with a body cam was there. And yet, we were told by Detective Duncan, the case agent on this case on the stand, that because of some problem, the walkthrough was not recorded. Detective Duncan also informed us that he does not know if any of the people present wrote a report about it. We can infer from Detective Duncan's testimony and the fact that we don't have an evidence, any body cam footage of the walkthrough, and no reports talking about it, that there are none, even though this would be crucial evidence for you, the jury, to have.
Sustained. The jury should disregard that comment. Again, the jury can only consider evidence that was admitted into testimony. I'm sorry, testimony that was admitted into evidence or exhibits that were admitted into evidence.
The state of Arizona has the obligation to show you evidence to prove that this event was not self-defense, as stated by the only three witnesses. So why not show the jury all the evidence that they gathered?
Again, sustained. The jury can only consider the evidence and testimony that was admitted into evidence.
We learned in this trial that Alex fully cooperated with law enforcement. We learned that my daughter Tylee fully cooperated with law enforcement. We learned that I fully cooperated with law enforcement. We learned that law enforcement treated all of us that day kindly and courteously on July 11th, 2019. That law enforcement treated us that day like this was self-defense. We were not given instructions to stay in town. We were not given instructions that we were under investigation of any kind. On July 11th, 2019, we were interviewed by Chandler Police and released with no further instructions. We learned that Chandler Police put out a press release that day on July 11th.
I'll sustain that objection to the extent the jury is to determine what the facts did or did not establish.
Under Arizona law, I had the right to self-defense. Tylee had the right to self-defense. Alex had the right to self-defense. This event was not planned or expected. It was shocking. We learned in this trial that Chandler Police Department neglected to do a thorough investigation. We learned that they did not swab Alex's hands for gunpowder residue. We learned that they did not swab my hands for gunpowder residue. We learned that they did not swab Tylee's hands for gunpowder residue. We learned that they did not luminol the gun. We learned that they did not luminol the bat. They did not test the DNA on the bat that they collected. They did not test the floorboard. They did not test the projectile. They did not test my husband's shirt. They did not search the rental car. They did not search any of our three cars that were there at the scene. They did not test the gun until over 5 years later. The Chandler Police Department did treat this event just like it was self-defense and a tragic family event. We learned in this trial that Charles and I were obviously having marital problems. Regardless of what was happening in our marriage at the time, on July 11th, this was self-defense. When Tylee came out with the bat to protect me, her mother, Charles did not have to take the bat from Tylee and start swinging. At 62 years old, Charles had a choice that day and could have put the bat down. A 2-minute period changed our lives forever. How are you supposed to choose between three people you love? Your husband, your daughter, your brother?
All right, hold on. All right, I'll caution the defendant not to testify about things that were not entered into evidence.
How can you decide for another person if they feel threatened? Why does the state want to blame to someone?
It's a reasonable person standard, not the standard of the person.
I'm sure you'll point that out in rebuttal. I'll allow the argument as that inference. Go ahead.
Why does the state want to blame someone for this tragic event? What evidence did the state show you in this trial that I wanted harm to come to my husband? We learned in this trial that I was praying for my husband. We learned in this trial that even though my husband and I were having marital issues, that we were both trying to do the best things for our son with special needs, JJ. We learned in this trial that I was shocked that Charles had changed his life insurance policy, but I was not angry as the state alleges. In the phone call we heard from the insurance company, we heard that I was disappointed for our children, our grown children, as well as our children still at home, but I was not angry. My husband Charles was providing for our children still at home. I had no motive to change that. We heard a lot in this trial about the Book of Mormon prophet named Nephi. This is the state's evidence to murder over self-defense, and it is utterly ridiculous. We heard from Detective Duncan, who admitted on the stand that he had no idea what I meant in the text message when I said, we will be like Nephi. In Mormon culture, Nephi signifies strong faith, perseverance, and courage.
Right. That's sustained.
The state's attempt to misconstrue the positive text message about a wonderful religious figure, Nephi, and try to turn it into an order to kill someone is absurd. This is an attempt by the state to try to retrofit a crime that doesn't exist. This event was not a crime. It was a tragedy. Don't let them turn my family tragedy into a crime. When I'm done speaking to you, the state gets to get up and rebut all that I've told you. They've got to have the last word, so to speak, because it is 100% their burden to prove to you that I committed a crime. And you won't be allowed to hear from me again. So I want you to remember that it is the state's job to prove to you that I committed a crime. And if you have not seen the evidence that leaves you firmly convinced that I have committed this very crime, then the state failed to show you the evidence that you need. Because I did not commit this crime. The only interview the state entered into evidence is mine. So I encourage you to go watch it. I told you just what happened that day. Just the way it happened. The state put forth a bunch of evidence in this trial in an effort to make you dislike me, to try to attack my character, so that you would just say guilty no matter what evidence they showed you. But only you get to decide. The state put up witnesses that had zero knowledge of a conspiracy. The state did not show you evidence of an agreement to commit murder. They showed you evidence of a family tragedy, and then they showed you the sad effects of a family torn apart because of that tragedy. That's all.
All right, the state does have the burden, so I have the right to open and close the argument. Do you want to give a rebuttal close? Go ahead.
The execution of Charles Vallow is not a family tragedy. There is nothing that you can say about shooting a man as he lay on the ground that you can try to construe in any way to make that a family tragedy. This case is about the defendant, not Alex Cox. Alex is involved in it because that is her co-conspirator. We are not here to determine his guilt, albeit it is quite obvious. This defendant wants you to just look at one piece, and she wants you to hope that there's only a person who will say, I saw, I heard the conspiracy. But what did you hear in every instruction is that you can look to other evidence to show that. This defendant wants you to forget about her words and pretend that when she told her lover, her soon-to-be husband, we got rid of him, that he changed the life insurance before we got rid of him? That somehow means what? That they killed him. And he changed his life insurance before they killed him. What does that tell you? That tells you motive, and that tells you who did it. This defendant is one of those we, because she's writing it. She wants you to pretend that when she is talking about Charles for months, acquiescing and agreeing to her brother killing him, having people tell her that it's wrong, having people know that they're planning something. That those words don't mean exactly what they are. We got rid of him. This defendant. The state, of course, has the burden. And that's how it should be. But every one of those justification defenses falls short when you look at the conspiracy itself. When they got rid of him, they did it by planning it. There is no reason that Alex Cox came over to this defendant's house with a loaded gun and waited for Charles to come inside, held there by this defendant using the cell phone. That is conspiracy. That is planning. That is premeditated. You can absolutely watch that whole video. That's why the state included that for you. What you're going to see is that Lori Vallow doesn't cry. She is not truthful, as we've gone through. Her timeline is absolutely wrong. She tells the detectives it's quick. It's 12 minutes. She wants you to believe that the police could understand all of this that day. But what did you hear? Is that all the police could tell initially was that the timeline was off. And then they started learning that the physical evidence seemed to be showing that Charles was executed on the floor, but they needed to see if the medical examiner agreed with them 2 days later. And then they needed to pull all those iCloud accounts, phone records, and go through terabytes of data to bring forth these things that you have now learned and hold. They interviewed these people who learned of the defendant's religious beliefs, that she was exalted, that she was a celestial being, that she didn't have to repent. Of course she thought she was Nephi. We learned that the physical evidence on Charles and at the scene show us that he was executed. And every single one of those defenses that the defendant has asked you to look at, the state has met its burden. Because even if you somehow believe that Charles actually had that bat and it wasn't staged like the rest of the scene with the shoes and the lack of blood there, that second shot is not justified for self-defense, crime prevention, or third-party defense. Arizona law does not allow you to execute a man on the ground. The defendant wants you to believe she was shocked and surprised by this. And yet, she goes wandering around, goes to Burger King, Walgreens, drops off her kid, comes back and jokes about her neighbors. Not one action of a person shocked, surprised. She wants you to feel bad for her daughter, Tylee. You saw her there. You heard from the detectives. She's also not shocked, crying, upset, worried. And you saw Alex. Same demeanor. Why? They've had 47 minutes to work it all out. Go through Charles's phone, figure out what they're going to say. They've talked on the phone twice in this time period. This case relies upon all of the investigation that the police did. That day when they knew that timeline was wrong, that day when they started to understand that the physical evidence at the scene was staged and wrong and didn't match what the defendant was saying, and then all of the evidence after that, culminating when this defendant told the man that she married later that she was having an affair with, as many times as she wants to say, Charles was my husband. She didn't want him as her husband. She wanted Chad Daybell. She wanted that life insurance policy, and yes, she was angry about it. And she said, we got rid of him. That is her confession to you. That is why she is guilty of conspiracy to commit first-degree murder. Thank you.
All right. Do we have Izzy coming over? Izzy, to be sworn in. All right, members of the jury, there are 14 of you. Only 12 of you can deliberate. At this time, we're going to choose the alternate jurors by random lot here. So we have our scientific method here of random numbers.
14.
Juror 14.
Five.
Juror 5. I don't think you're 5. Well, maybe you are. Okay, so to the alternates, if I don't see you again, I want to thank you for participating in this process. The admonition still applies to you until we call you and tell you that it's been lifted. I have, in the past, had to have callback alternate jurors to testify or to deliberate when, for whatever reason, one of the jurors can't continue to deliberate, becomes sick, has a family emergency, etc. So you still could have to deliberate in this case. But again, if I don't see you again, I really do want to thank you for participating in this process. I know it might be somewhat of a disappointment to not deliberate right now, but we will keep you posted and we'll let you know if we need you. The remaining 12 jurors will retire to the jury room and begin your deliberations. First, we're going to swear in my staff.
Do you swear that you will take charge of this jury and protect their deliberations from all outside interference and communication, and when they have reached a verdict, you will bring them back into court without revealing their verdict to anyone, so help you God?
I do.
Izzy, drop those off. And drop those off.
All rise for the jury.
The jury is no longer present in the courtroom. I've passed out proposed aggravation phase jury instructions. In the event that there is a verdict of guilt, the state elects to proceed with an aggravation phase of this trial. So I'll let the parties review that. It's not too long.
I think I just spelled a mistake on page 3. That's as a 3 in it.
Got it. All right, we'll be at recess until we hear from the jury.
All right.
There's more live courtroom coverage coming up. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a second from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.